Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished leader from Singapore, Mr. Ron Kaufman. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ash. It's a pleasure to be here with you and all of your viewers and listeners.
Thank you. Ron is the world's leading educator for uplifting service performance and building service cultures. He has Global Gurus has ranked him for uplifting service, the number one customer service development program in the world. He's an author of a book titled Uplifting Service, The Proven Path to Delighting Your Customers, Colleagues, and Everyone Else You Meet. He's also an author of additional 14 books, and he's been rated amongst the top 25 Who's Hot speakers. Wow, what an amazing journey you've had, Ron, so far.
It's been a wonderful journey, blessed every year, every day, and may we continue for years to come.
Absolutely. So, Ron, let's start talking about uplifting service performance.
Sure.
What goes into uplifting service performance?
Great. I started working in the field of service 3 decades ago. Mm-hmm. And my first question was, are we clear about what we actually mean by service? Mm-hmm. And it turned out not to be so, that people had many different terms and interpretations and very shallow definitions like do whatever makes the customer happy or serve other people the way you'd like to be served, which, mm-hmm. by the way, is very bad advice if the person you're serving is not like you. So I ended up writing a definition that service is taking action to create value for someone else.
Okay.
Okay, now if the person you're taking action to create value for is yourself, that's called self-service. Okay. But that's the one that proves the rule. That's the exception. Yeah. Uh-huh. So otherwise, you're taking action to create value for somebody else.
Yep.
So when you talk about uplifting service, then it needs to be some action that's not already being taken that will create some new added or fresh value for the person that you're serving. Mm-hmm. Okay, now what's the most important component in that? Is it the action you take? Is it the value you create? Or is it actually understanding the person that you're serving?
Correct.
And that turned the whole thing upside down, because then all of a sudden it said, if you want to uplift service as a reputation for your brand, as a position differentiated for your company in the industry, for your team within the company internally, or for your external customers, the most important thing is how well do you understand the party that you're serving, what it is that they value. Then you can figure out and go to work on what actions should we take.
Very interesting. What, you know, in your definition, service is taking action to serve someone else.
To create value for someone else, right.
How do you determine how the recipient of the service, who is the most important, agrees with your interpretation of what he or she wants?
Right. Well, that's, you know, when you say agrees with your interpretation, begins with how curious are you to find out what it is that they want and value. And part of what it is that's enabled me to be a strong contributor in this field of service and customer experience is I created analytic frameworks. So, for example, one of those tools is called the four categories of value.
Right.
And the first category I call the primary product. Like, what's the main reason people are coming to you here? The second category is the delivery systems. Now that is it easy, convenient, speedy, user-friendly to actually be served by you? The third category is the attitude and mindset.
Right.
The friendliness, the helpfulness, the right? And most people, when they hear the word service, that's the only category they think of.
Correct.
The fourth category is called ongoing relationship. So does the person that you serve have the experience like you're just trying to close the deal or finish the project or, you know, put this ticket away? Or do they get the experience that you really understand and care about the future that they care about? And you're serving them in the present to enable that future? That's ongoing relationship. Different people value different things at different times. So, for example, price is a component of the primary product. And some people say, I just want it cheap and I want it fast.
Correct.
And if your people are not particularly friendly, that's okay. And if it's just a momentary transaction for those people, that's okay. But you'll get the very next customer who says, you know, I've never done this before. I'm a little bit nervous. I really want to be sure. And they will gladly pay more. for a better attitude and for the care that gives them the before care, before sale and after sale service.
Fascinating. And you also speak about measuring service performance. Tell me what you mean by measuring and how does one do it?
Well, there are many ways depending upon the industry and even depending upon which function within a particular organization. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you the big flaw that many people have when they talk about measuring is when you're talking about performance standards. Yeah. And so you can say, you have service leaders who say, you know, well, what's the standard here? And what they're thinking of is, what's the standard process? What's the standard procedure? What's the standard behavior that we as the service provider are responsible for providing under a service level agreement, right? Or a certain, you know, service standard.
Yeah.
No, the standard that matters is the experience of the customer. Are they getting the experience level that they want? So let's use an airline as an example. Some people pay a lot more money to sit in first class. People pay a certain amount of money for business, and some people want the cheapest possible seat on the plane. So how can you deliver excellent service to all three? Well, you can, as long as the understanding of what is excellent service has been calibrated to these three different segments. So then you're not really measuring performance based on how big was the meal or how many different drinks were available, et cetera. You're measuring it based on the experience and the perception and the opinion of the customers. Did we serve them the way they expected, which by the way is not a very high level, the way they desired, like what they hoped for? Did we offer any surprising in our service? Now, it's a completely different action to surprise somebody in first class than it is to surprise somebody in economy. But if your standard is to provide surprising service, then you want your people to be creative, creatively thinking, what would be surprising in each of these different levels?
How wonderful. So let me now move to your and my favorite airline, which is Singapore Airlines.
Okay.
You know, I'm probably one of the few people who continues to be a life solitaire with Singapore Airlines. You worked with Singapore Airlines to build their incredible service culture. And I've often said every time I get into an SQ flight, I am surprised irrespective of the class I'm traveling in. What do they do differently that seems to resonate with customers around the world?
Yeah, they've done something tremendously important. And by the way, just to be clear, I have had the privilege of contributing to the outstanding success of Singapore Airlines.
That's what I said, that you worked with SQ to be able to build
work
this
with them
culture.
Right. But you know, they would have been just fine without me. Like I say, I recognize I did 38 different programs.
I'll give you lots of credit.
Okay. I'll be a little bit more humble about it.
Okay.
Okay. So they have two things going. Number one is outstanding service performance. So, for example, when a new member of the cabin crew is selected and oriented, they go through 4 months of training before they ever get on board a flight wearing the sarong kabaya or wearing the cabin crew suit. So they are rigorous about outstanding service performance in every class of travel. And that's, by the way, true not only in the air, but also in reservations, in sales, with their ground handling agents, you know, et cetera, all the way through. But the other thing they've done is they've built an outstanding service culture. Okay, now those are not the same.
Correct.
In other words, you could have somebody who's a service superstar, goes above and beyond the call of duty, you know, a real hero about service, and the culture of that organization is not a great service culture. You could have an individual like that. But if you want it to be consistent over time, shift after shift, location after location, year after year, then you have to build the cultural side as well.
Correct.
Which means the internal service also needs to be as much an important focus. So think about what enables a Singapore Airlines flight. Engineering, technical crew, pilots, ground handling, cargo, catering, sales, cleaners. I mean, you've got a whole ecosystem of service providers with, to, and for each other that then enable the passenger to have their experience. And Singapore Airlines has done both. But I'll add that they've done one other thing. On the culture side, they actually have two cultures.
Okay.
One culture is called service excellence. That's for you and me as passengers. But the other culture is called cost effectiveness.
Okay.
Okay. So where's the Singapore Airlines headquarters? Is it in a gleaming downtown building? No, that would be too expensive per square foot. It's at the airport. If you go visit them in the lobby, do they have a big fish tank full of tropical fish? No, it would cost money to feed the fish, and it's not going to change the experience for the passenger. So I give you one little example of that. I was in Italy at their country office with the country manager for Singapore Airlines, and he was walking me through the hallways of the office, and he started to stroke the walls. And he said, I love these walls. You know, this is strange. I've never heard anybody say that before. I said, what are you talking about? He said, we just finished a renovation and I got these so cheap. And then he said to me, even chairman recommended me on how inexpensive it was. So they put the attention on the service experience.
So let me turn the word culture around a little bit. You know, you spoke about service culture. I want to ask you, how does culture, and when I say culture, it means culture in different countries, different communities, how does culture impact service?
Oh, my goodness, it's extraordinary. Let me give you some examples. We've worked with companies that have outstanding operational cultures. Procedure, performance, efficiency, productivity, boom, got it down pat. And then they say, we want to become better at the service experience that we're providing. You have a real challenge here to get these procedure operation focused human beings to start to look at this, what they're doing from the recipient's point of view. That customer is not an account number. That customer is not a delivery date. That customer is a human being. That's a shift.
Correct.
Okay, we work with other companies where, for example, safety is an outstanding, strong culture, or sales, or product innovation. And then they say, now we want to add service. Okay. Incidentally, those are some of the best clients to work with because they understand already that developing a culture is not something you wave a magic wand.
Correct.
You have to hire the right people, orient them properly, use a common language throughout the organization everyone understands, communicate effectively, recognize and reward the right kind of behaviors, et cetera, et cetera. I call that the 12 building blocks of service culture.
Fascinating, fascinating. My next question to you, Ron, is that there is a role that leadership and capability play in developing a service culture. You know, you just gave me an example of Singapore Airlines where even the chairman commended the person. Now, for someone at the level of the chairman of Singapore Airlines to actually know or get to know about a wall being used tells me a lot about the leadership and their attention to culture.
Yeah,
I'd love to get your perspective on how does leadership of large organizations or even startups build a service culture that is omnipresent across the whole organization.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. And I face this with leaders all the time where they say, okay, Ron Kaufman, you and your team, you're reputed. We know you can do the thing. Come on in here and help us. And the foundation of the architecture is about what we call actionable service education. Fundamental principles, linguistic distinctions, practical tools, teach people how to use those. But I say to the leaders, you have to be the first ones to understand these. You have to use that language. You have to require that your people talk to you using those tools, those language, those interpretations. You have to be able to guide and support them. And it's just extraordinary how often leadership says, no, that's a training program for the front line. Well, then you're not going to build the culture.
Correct.
But on the other hand, when you get the leader of the organization saying, I know what's happening here. I can use that language and I can help you understand and learn the language. Then it's so easy for everybody else to follow the leaders.
Well said. And yet I've spoken to many startup entrepreneurs and when I've asked them a question on culture, they always say that what applies to me does not necessarily apply to the rest of the organization. And I've often said, if you're not willing to be governed by the same stringent norms and cultures, then you'll never be able to build a culture. My question to you is, how does a startup build a strong culture?
Okay, that's a great question because startups are not the same as large government organizations or multinational organizations or educational organizations or any other large company or even medium size. A startup is a startup. And a startup is always going to be facing three challenges. Mm-hmm. One is, how are you going to differentiate in the market in the first place so that there's even a niche for you?
Correct.
Right. And that goes back to the question of which of the four categories of value do you want to differentiate in? Mm-hmm. For example, you could be faster or more convenient, mm-hmm. or you could actually have a technically better product, mm-hmm. or you're going to be commoditized in those, but your service is going to be impeccable. Mm-hmm. Right. Or you're going to put lots and lots of attention on the relationship with the customer, even mm-hmm. though everything else has been commoditized within your industry. But right. as a startup, you have to figure that out. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you have to attract the people who are devoted to that particular kind of value creation mm-hmm. and create a culture that delivers that.
Right.
Now, for the leader of the startup, yes, they've got to, you know, champion that and understand it, et cetera. But let's face it, the leader of a startup also has to be looking over two horizons mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, where are we right now? And who's about to eat my lunch? And what can we possibly do? And should we merge with these guys? Or should we expand? Or should we hold back? I mean, mm-hmm. there's mm-hmm. a whole other range of issues. So mm-hmm. I understand when anybody who's starting doing a startup mm-hmm. says, it doesn't apply to me. Well, it does plus plus. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't apply to you the same as it does to the people who actually work for you, for whom it needs to be the entire plus plus. Mm.
Fascinating. So I'm now going to move to your books, Ron.
Sure.
Tell me about your book, Uplifting Service, The Proven Path to Delighting Your Customers, Colleagues, and Everyone Else You Must Meet. Tell me about your hypothesis, what made you write it. But before that, tell me, is this available on Amazon?
Yeah, it's on Amazon, it's on Audible, it's available mm-hmm. as a Kindle, and all of your viewers can get the whole first section for free okay. if you just go to ronkaufman.com/books.
Okay.
So my name is spelled ronkaufman.com/books, and you can get the first section for free. You can also get a leader's and reader's guide mm-hmm. to the book. Mm-hmm. Which just by reading through all those questions gives you a sense of, oh my goodness, look at what he's covering. Wow. So to answer your question, there were a lot of books already about service. Mm-hmm. And there were a few about service culture, but I said, wait a minute, remember this was back in 1990 when I started working in the field of service. So I saw Changi International Airport, Raffles mm-hmm. Hotel, Singapore mm-hmm. Airlines domestically. But also you had American Express and you had Citibank, you know, in terms of the banking industry. And there were other great examples around the world, but mm-hmm. they were in very different industries. And what I decided to do was look at, although they're in different industries with different customer segments and even in different geographies, what is it that they're doing in common? Mm-hmm. And that helped me to tease out this architecture where mm-hmm. there's a foundation of educating their people mm-hmm. because the schools don't teach our children about service customers and creating value, teach mm-hmm. them technical or whatever other skills. And then I saw these 12 building blocks of service culture, mm-hmm. which helped me to be able to see this architecture of activities, even though each of them did the activities differently. Mm-hmm. And then, if you will, the roof of the house on top of the architecture, that's the leadership behavior. Mm. And I call that the 7 rules of service leadership. There's a wonderful video on YouTube. If people type in the 7 rules of service leadership in my name, mm-hmm. you'll get to watch.
Okay. I'll look for that. I'll look out for that. So I've got time for one more question. And I wanted to ask you that you live in Singapore. I've lived in Singapore for many, many years. What makes a country so good with service?
Great. And I'll answer that in a way that also speaks about what makes a company so good in service.
Correct.
Or what makes an individual or a team or a leader so good in service. Mm-hmm. Or potentially what would make humanity wonderful. So good yes. in service. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So remember, my original definition was service is taking action to create value mm-hmm. for someone. And value is often calibrated in numbers. Mm-hmm. Make money, save money, get value for money, save mm-hmm. time, yeah. et cetera. Okay. But what makes something valuable mm-hmm. is when it contributes to someone's well-being. Mm-hmm. Okay? So then we could say, okay, service is taking action to create value that contributes to someone's well-being. Mm-hmm. Well, in this era of COVID, and now in the very unsettled era of ecological crisis that we're in, and even mm-hmm. geopolitical conflict and yeah. you know, economic inequality, et cetera, mm-hmm. this word care has been floated a lot. Mm-hmm. So I really did some thinking about that and realized, well, what is care? Care is concern, like, oh, I care. Mm-hmm. But that's not enough. It's got to be mm-hmm. concern and commitment.
Correct.
Commitment to what? To someone's well-being. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, hold on a second. If care is concern and commitment to well-being, how do you take good care? Mm-hmm. Well, then you better take some action.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can see that service and care are intimately connected with each other. Okay. Mm-hmm. What has changed and what makes a country so successful or a company is not just care for their colleagues, mm-hmm. like staff, you know, people are our most valuable asset, mm-hmm. and our customers, because we want them to come back in the future and also recommend and refer us, mm-hmm. but also the communities in which we live, mm-hmm. where our staff and our customers come from, mm-hmm. and also the ecological environment, and then the country, and then the region, and then the world.
Sure, sure. Well said. Well said. Ron, on that note, and my big takeaway, services taking action to create value to serve someone else. Thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for giving me such an amazing perspective on service performance, on culture, about your amazing experience with Singapore Airlines. Thank you for talking to me about your book. I will go and look for it on Amazon. And I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to check out your book as well. Thank you again for speaking to me and good luck.
Thank you very much, Ash. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.